Right, so I'm pleased to be joined by Lisa and Gemma, who have joined us in the studio at the moment. I know that we'll find out more about Gemma in a short while, but if I can start with you, Lisa, we have communicated, and you are involved in an organisation called Calm Charm, is that right?
Yeah, it's called the Calm Charm. I started it just before lockdown, so back end of 2019, and I started basically making key rings for a grounding technique. So it's a technique that I've used over the years for my mental health. It helps me.
Well, been talking about it this morning.
Have you?
Eve was on it with the ring or something. Yeah.
So I spin a ring on my finger for a grounding technique. So it's really interesting to hear about the key ring. So what do you do with the key ring?
So it reminds you of the 5-4-3-2-1 technique. So it's a technique where you see five things, feel four, hear three, smell two, and taste one. It works really, really well for bringing your brain, I hate this saying, but bringing your brain back to the present moment. It's basically convincing your brain that you are not in fight or flight. So when you're having anxiety, panic attacks, it works for PTSD. It also helps with like addiction. I'm currently trialing it myself for chronic pain as well. So it works for any time that your brain is overwhelmed. So by paying attention to the small details in everyday little things, your brain is forced to realize that it can't possibly be under threat. So your anxiety, your panic attacks, all the overwhelming thoughts, they kind of subside and that's it. The problem that I had was that when I was mid panic attack, trying to remember how many of which senses I had to do was actually really difficult. So instead of going around seeing five things, I go around trying to sniff five things, and it gets really weird, really awkward, really inappropriate quite quickly.
So sorry to kind of interrupt there, but I just want to keep track. So tell me, I mean, obviously you've got these kind of approaches that you take to help you out.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, what is your story that took you to the place that you needed to do these things? If you don't mind, and you don't have to reveal it.
I'm an open book, complete open book.
Okay.
I believe that actually by sharing my story and the stuff that I've been through, it helps other people. So my journey started, I'll try to keep it short, I promise.
Okay.
But my journey started, it was to do with my brother. So he was terminally ill, 2 years older than me. And when I was six, he was eight, we found out that he had this terminal illness. It was a genetic thing. It was going to rid him of his life, basically. It was going to end up with him kind of losing his eyesight, then ending up sort of epileptic. Then he'd get like a young version of dementia. He'd end up bedridden, wearing an adult nappy, for want of a word, and being fed through a tube until eventually his whole body would break down and just stop.
Wow.
So my anxieties came from a lot of that. We couldn't go around him if we had like a cold or an illness or something. Everything always had to be very clean. So my OCD took a real kind of, that's where it came from. It was really overwhelming at times. I'd kind of get to a point where I'd wash my hands so much that they crack and bleed. I once sprayed my face with Dettol from the health anxiety that I had from it.
Really?
So I went to hug somebody once and they told me that their son or daughter had been ill the night before. And it panicked me that much that I was going to catch something. I actually sprayed my face with Dettol surface spray.
Wow.
So it was years of going through all of this. I mean, I'm 40 now. But it started probably when I was like 10, 11, something like that, because straight off it was like, right, okay, well, how do we prolong my brother's life? What do we do? And how do we live our lives so that he gets the best out of everything, but we prolong it as much as we possibly could? So it was very kind of, you had no choice but to do these sort of things. And I was very aware of that. And so I think growing up around that kind of mentality really sort of ingrained in me and how I lived my life from there. So I went through years of, after he passed away, so he passed away in 2010, I started having my first panic attacks probably 2008, so a couple of years beforehand, the ones that I kind of really recognised.
Talk me through what a panic attack means to you.
Hell, I think is the only way that you can put it. It's not, so the difference between anxiety and panic attacks is anxiety will kind of grow over a short, like a longer period of time. So it'll be kind of an uncomfortable feeling that something's not quite right, and it'll just carry on going until you reach kind of a peak.
Mm.
A panic attack is a symptom of anxiety. So a panic attack is much more intense. It's when your body is in fight or flight. It believes your life is at risk. It believes that you are about to die from whatever thing that it can possibly think that you're going to get attacked by, whether it, you know, it perceives a threat in something that you've heard, something that you smelt, something that you've seen. It, your brain will pick that up straight off.
And interpret it as a
interpret
threat.
Interpret it as a threat, yeah, exactly. And it will start getting your body to do all those things to get away from that threat. Mm. So you'll do things like your chest muscles will contract, which gives you chest pains. But the chest muscles contract so that it protects your inner organs. You'll, quite honestly, feel sick. Like, you can get really nauseous with it. Some people do actually throw up with it. And you can also get issues down the other end as well. And that is basically your body getting you to be as light as you possibly can to run away from whatever the threat is.
Right.
Quickest way to lose weight, get rid of the morning's breakfast, get rid of last night's dinner.
Yeah.
So it's all these things that your body starts doing, like the palpitations. Mm. When you run, when you exercise, obviously your heart rate goes up and you start sweating, and, you know, that's what's happened. When you're in a panic attack, your body is already getting you ready to be at that point. So your heart will start racing, you'll start sweating.
Yeah.
So it's understanding, for me, a key thing was understanding all of these kind of symptoms and these things that were happening to my body that actually made it a lot less scary. Mm. So when I was Googling, instead of just Googling things like, you know, chest pains, which obviously Dr. Google told me that I died, you know, 2 hours ago it, and I should probably get to A&E.
Yeah.
You know, instead of that, I put in like chest pains and anxiety.
Right.
So I started to find out more information about why my body was doing these things, why I was getting the internal tremors, which again, you know, if you think about what your body's going to do when you're getting ready to run away from something or fight something and fight for your life, you'll get the internal tremors because you're the cortisol and the adrenaline's already running around your muscles. You're already getting to that point where you're kind of tensed up and ready to go.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how everything started. And this technique, if go back to the 5-4-3-2-1, if you imagine you were being chased down the road by a bear, okay? Happens all the time in Liverpool, I know. All the time. We just dodged one as we came in.
Right.
So if you imagine you were being chased down the road by a bear, you wouldn't be able to stop and look at the details of like your bracelet or smell the different
parts. You're
just doing one. You're just running and that's it. So by forcing your brain to do these kind of things, it's forced to realize that actually you're not under attack. You can't possibly be in danger.
Mm.
So it stops it. So this is where I ended up building the key rings.
It's almost, when you think about it, in my understanding of how the brain is constructed, you've got like this reptilian brain at the base of it, which is your fight and flight, and then you've got all of the add-on bits that evolution has provided. And it's as if there's a design fault. It's as if somebody in their design said, oh, by the way, let's get rid of that we don't need that reptilian brain anymore. Because if it wasn't there, then you wouldn't have these problems. And if you just focused on the logical aspect of what is there. But I mean, you might need a couple of million years more evolution before that goes.
You'd need the years of evolution, but you still need that fight or flight part of your brain. You still need it. It's the bit that keeps you out of danger.
Yeah.
What you need it to do is just realize when you are actually in danger and when you're not. That's the key thing. It's like I was speaking to a lady over the weekend who said that she was part of an event that happened in the town centre where someone came in to, it looked like they were going to attack her. And we were talking about this and how it had all happened and everything. She said that she felt like her legs have never moved that quickly in her life. Yeah. She didn't realise they could move that quickly as she scooped up her friend's kids and kind of ran. You need that reptilian part. You need it's called the amygdala. Mm. You need that fight or flight part, the amygdala, to keep you safe.
Yeah.
But what happens during a panic attack is there's another part of your brain. If you imagine, I don't know how this is going to come across on radio, but if you imagine your brain like your hand, if you put your thumb across into the palm of your hand and then close your fingers down over, so the thumb in the middle is technically your amygdala, and the fingers that are closed down over it is something called your prefrontal cortex.
Yeah.
So that's your sensible part of your brain. The amygdala is the emotional part. Mm. So generally, when we're kind of sitting around chatting like now, I don't feel under threat. So the prefrontal cortex is nicely tucking over my amygdala.
Yeah.
I feel safe. We're okay. We're just chatting. It's absolutely fine. When you go through a panic attack or severe anxiety, what happens is your prefrontal cortex opens up and your amygdala is free to do what it wants. So that's when it goes into the fight or flight.
I think it's a really interesting way you'd explain that, actually.
It's the best way that I found, and this is what I do now. So I've picked all of the bits, the best bits in the best possible ways that I've learned how to deal with my anxiety to a point where I can come onto a radio show and be absolutely fine. And
so the experience of this in anticipation of coming on this show would have caused you a problem then sometime back before you'd have
back
gone.
Before, you would not have caught me in Liverpool, let alone
really
at a radio. I couldn't cope with trains. When I first moved up to the north, I tried to go into Manchester at one point. And my husband, we drove in and we parked at the big train station. Manchester, is it Victoria?
Yeah.
So we parked there. Now, I'm from Somerset, so the biggest kind of train station that I'd ever seen was Bath, Bristol, right? It's not huge by any means, it's really not. But I was so overwhelmed, I couldn't even get through the train station because I walked out of the car park. There were so many cars anyway, and it was so busy. And then by the time I actually got into the train station, I just saw these huge ceilings, all these trains going everywhere, all these people, and all of a sudden, all of my senses were completely overwhelmed, and I just stopped. I went into full just fright. It wasn't even fight or flight. I just froze. I just couldn't move.
I get it. Not from a personal point of view, I might add. Evie, has been contributing to the show for a while, and she knows my daughter suffers from anxiety. And we had a recent episode because we'd gone to Rome, and me and the wife had found St. Peter's Square the night before. She said, "Oh, you've got to come and see it." And we went there, and there was nobody there. Then on the day we came down, just so happened that the Pope decides to throw a gig in. Excuse me. So anyway, my daughter was coming to pieces because of all of these people. And I was getting angry because I'm thinking, I want to go see this and I can't comprehend it. And it was when I sat down and thought about it, I felt really awful over it because I think, I don't know what's going through my mind. But when you explain it, when Evie explains it to me, when you explain it to me, I get it. And it's one of those things. I'm not saying I can completely grasp it or fully comprehend what's going through somebody's mind. But yeah, it's perhaps maybe a lot more people like me need to be sympathetic to that being a problem for somebody.
Well, following on from what you said before as well, with the amygdala, people who suffer with anxiety, depression, things like that, the volume of the amygdala is much larger than it's supposed to be as well. So the way that I love the way that you described that then with the thumb over, and I'm thinking, oh, it's such a visual representation, it's lovely. But when you think about it as well, your prefrontal cortex there, when it's covering it up, when the amygdala is so large as well, and you can't reduce that volume because it does get bigger in size, and your prefrontal cortex.
Do you mean it gets bigger as a result of the circumstances that it finds itself in, you mean?
Because anxiety.
Because it's used so much more. So it's like, obviously, when you work out, you grow muscles. And because your amygdala is used more than your prefrontal cortex in that moment, your prefrontal cortex has got, a little bit of gains. And then your amygdala is this big hench gym ed thing. And you're going, oh my God.
Gemma, tell us how you fit into all of this, by the way.
Okay, so I was originally an early years and primary school teacher for over 10 years. And then I left teaching in the classroom and started my own business called GEM, which stands for Giving Emotions a Meaning.
All right.
So what I'm all about is helping children with their emotional development, but do it through a lot of creative activities. Because I think I found from teaching that there's a lot of focus, especially in early years, on the social and emotional side of education, but it probably, as you go further up the school, there's not as much focus on it. But I'm really passionate about helping the children with their emotions from a young age, because if you can instill in them from a young age to express and to understand and to talk about their emotions, then hopefully as they grow older, they don't keep their emotions bottled up. So that's how it links into all the mental health. So hopefully helping to reduce the amount of children that have mental health issues going forward in the future.
Yeah. Right.
Where were you when I was younger? Where were you?
I said the same.
With DBT now, the therapy that I'm in, they're teaching us to express our emotions.
Oh, okay.
And as a fellow teacher as well, I've left the education system, and I don't blame you for leaving the state of it now. But it's so lovely that you're doing that. What was the reason behind, what was the inspiration that led you to think, you know what, this is what I want to do?
I think from being in early years and you see how many children do struggle with emotions, and obviously with there being their age as well, obviously it can like come as they get older, but I think I'm just more on that side of it, more so than like the academic side. I think you've got to be able to get the children to the point where they feel safe and secure and able to communicate their emotions before you can start to, you know, I don't know, reading and writing. Obviously that is very important in life, but you need to give them those strong foundations. And I think I had some like work anxieties and things like that. So when I left, and obviously thinking about all of that, and I think, you know, it's important that you help the children on their journey, and just doing it through creativeness as well, rather than just sitting down and just, you know, saying, asking them questions. You do it through a lot of like interactive, so they sometimes find it a lot easier as well to express
themselves.
So
you don't want to be telling them, you want them to find their own way, don't you? Learn
definitely.
It themselves. That's the best kind of knowledge. And how did the collaboration with Lisa come about then?
Okay, so I used to work with Lisa, and she helped me an awful lot through like the Calm Charm and things, the techniques that she taught me. And then we decided to do a collaboration, and as Lisa was saying, well, I don't think you've gone to that yet, have you? But Lisa will do a lot of coaching with adults, and then obviously I do a lot of the work with the children. So we decided to do a collaboration together where we offer a package to go into schools. So Lisa delivers her training, a 3-hour training to staff in schools, which I'm sure she'll tell you all about soon. And then while she's doing that, I teach the children about about positivity, giving them confidence, teaching them about how to express and understand different emotions. And so in the classroom, I do it through creative activities. And the ones that we've done so far, we've had really good feedback on, and the children seem to really enjoy it because it's more of a like an arts and crafts, but they're really engaging and they're really getting the knowledge and the understanding through those activities on how to help them with their emotions.
Well, let's come back to you if we can then, Lisa. And you know, one of the things that when we were communicating before you came on, you have this approach that you want to kind of turn the way that health, mental health is kind of approached on its head. So how do you go about doing that, and what is it you've got planned that would be of use to people who might be in a position that could use your help?
Yeah, so first and foremost, my kind of theory is that why can't mental health training be fun? I've been on many mental health sessions, and they are exceptionally serious, and it almost kind of induces anxiety when I'm sat in them. And it's always been kind of around, right, okay, these are the symptoms that you can expect. This is what it is. It's never been around the information that I wish that I had. So, you know, the science behind your brain, so that amygdala, the prefrontal cortex, how that works. And I absolutely loved your analogy about, you know, how it's been beefed up and it's gone to the gym. It's a gym ed, because it is. So it's about understanding that, and the fact that your amygdala is, at the end of the day, your brain's a muscle. So of course it's going to gain in size if you use certain parts of it, the same as if you went to the gym. So for me, to turn it on its head is to have it so that it is fun. It is, you will laugh. If you take anything away from it, it's definitely going to be a chuckle, because it's all about my shared stories, my shared experience, the stuff that I've been through, the ways that I've been exceptionally embarrassed about the stuff that I do, but also about how it's been quite liberating to sit and talk about stuff as well. So it's more around doing the non-medical side of things, because you can get medication for anxiety, panic attacks, depression at the drop of a hat. You go to a doctor's, and unfortunately, I know that they're very much under pressure, and I get that, but you go to a doctor's and you say, right, I'm feeling like I've had this experience. Mine was slightly worse, because I went to the doctor's and I said to them, right, I'm you know, having these low thoughts, can I go for a talking therapy? And they said, right, okay, well, we'll refer you to that, but it's a year and a half waiting list. In the meantime, year and a half.
And you have to take the medication if you want the therapy.
Yeah. I got threatened at one point by the doctor, who turned around to me because I said to him, I don't want the medication. I haven't ever reacted well to it. I don't want to have the medication. And he said, right, well, if that's what you're doing, then we might have to review that, because it sounds like you're making decisions that aren't in your best interest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
That's scary, that, isn't it?
Absolutely terrifying. As someone that's going to the doctors for help, because I'm having all these low thoughts and all these, like, these really overwhelming emotions, to go in and have them say that to me.
And you want to combat it in a holistic way. You don't want to do it through medication.
Yeah, right? And you know what? If throughout my whole journey through this, I think I've taken one lot of anxiety meds, and that was just for the palpitations. And that was just to try to calm my heart down a little bit. That was all that was for. It wasn't for any kind of low mood, anything else like that. And I'm not bashing medication at all. It's definitely got its place, and it's definitely has its areas where it helps. It really does. But there needs to be more done to understand actually how the brain works, how it reacts to stuff, and what you can do that doesn't necessarily involve medication. So that's where I come in. I start saying, right, okay, well, here's the stuff that I've used previously, whether it be naming your amygdala or giving it a face and a name and talking to it as a separate person. Mine's called Dahlia.
Right.
Whether it be, you know, if you've got an overwhelming thought where you're sitting there saying, okay, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? Giving yourself an or. So asking yourself or. So if I said to you, for example, black or white, hot or cold, you always automatically go to the complete opposite. So when your brain is saying, right, okay, well, what if this happens, what if that happens, if you turn around to your brain and say or, you'll get the complete opposite. Now, as anxiety sufferers, we always go to the worst case scenario. So for instance, today, one of my previous thoughts before I'd kind of, you know, got to a point where I could manage everything would have been, what if we got completely lost? What if we were late? What if I came on the radio? And what if I had a panic attack? I mean, now I think, right, okay, well, actually, if I had a panic attack on the radio, then I could just go through the technique. And what better way to tell you how it works? But, you know, so previously I would have gone, or, okay, what if I find it absolutely fine? Or what if I don't find it, but actually I'm still there in plenty of time anyway? Or what if I don't have a panic attack on air? Do you see what I mean? So it's automatic kind of opposite that your brain goes to.
So you've got options.
There's complete options.
Instead of you think you've got no option, then you've got options there. And it's a funny thing, really, because I mean, I sometimes, from being a bit supernaturally, I'd attribute it to me Piscean star signs, fish swimming in the opposite direction. It's sometimes when I'm doing something that I know I like and I'm hating it. Because you're not in the zone. And I just think to myself, there's no thinking, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I don't think like that. I think, you ain't going to feel like this in 2 hours' time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And you think, just get to that point, there won't be a problem.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the ways that I look at it. And I'm not the expert here, but I pick up on bits, because I'm fortunate through doing this show that I get to speak to, like you said, that I speak to Evie, speak to Amy. Amy, it's Jenna. Sorry about Amy. She had to get the same out of my life.
It's a male thing.
There you go. Yeah. So, it sounds fascinating. So, when the combination that you've both got then, Gemma, and it seems to be like a partnership that's working quite well for you, because you're covering all the demographic, aren't you?
Definitely. Yeah, no, it's really good, and it helps that Lisa and I are really good friends as well.
Yeah.
So we can bounce a lot of like ideas off each other, and we just work really well together.
And that in itself can be quite therapeutic, because if people see that the partnership is functional as well, that makes a difference, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. It's been one of those things where, like, I will always push all my friends to be the best that they can possibly be, and kind of, you know, I'm a bit stubborn, really. I just kind of grab Gemma and I just go, right, we're going to go and do this. I don't really know how I don't induce more anxiety.
We're very similar. Come on, we're doing this.
Come on, let's go.
Sometimes I think that's what you need, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, impetus. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't feel like going out tonight, and then you think, oh, I might not go. And then when you go, you know it's good.
Yeah,
you get
definitely.
There. You know what I mean? It's just got to think beyond, haven't
you? Yeah. And this is the thing, like, when we went into our first school and we did our first session, like, we know the schools need it. We know the primary school kids need it. I, like you said, Evie, you know, where were you when you were like 10 years old? I know that I needed that at that age. So I know the kids need it, especially now more than ever. It's actually, there's been a scientific study done to say that kids of that kind of age, their brains have modeled physically differently through COVID, because your prefrontal cortex, it's not fully modelled until you're like early 20s, late teens, early 20s. Mm. So the kids, where they had, you know, homeschooling and everything else, they weren't going out and they weren't, their sensible decisions, the prefrontal cortex, that bit that makes those sensible decisions, wasn't being tested because they're at home, they're safe, they're in that environment. So it's not, they've physically modelled differently.
It comes back to what you were saying there about, you know, if you want to physically look good, you go to the gym.
Yeah.
And the mind, you know, brain being a muscle and whatever, it's the same kind of thing really, isn't it? I always find computers a good analogy. You know, if you overwhelm a computer with too much stuff, it doesn't function properly.
Crashes, you get the blue screen of death.
And a computer was designed to fundamentally be a very, very clever human.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the basic principles are there, aren't they?
It really is. And, you know, so with having Gemma being able to work with the children and me being able to work with the adults, like, teachers are so overwhelmed at the minute. It's not an industry I would ever wish to get into anyway, but especially at the minute, you know, it's so tough. So to be able to offer that service, as it were, as a package to go along with, you know, the Department for Education, they're going on about a whole school approach. And this is what me and Gemma are offering now specifically for schools. I mean, obviously, I do the training for general companies and individuals. So I have like virtual sessions and stuff that, you know, the general kind of Joe Blogs can attend. But for schools, it's particularly at our hearts because we're getting kids at the age where I started struggling, but also the teachers that I've worked with previously in my professional life that I know needs the extra help and that information. Because then as well, they can pass it on to the parents. So if parents are struggling, there's nothing to say that the teachers can't sit with the parents and say, right, okay, well, actually, if you're struggling with your anxiety as well, speak to Lisa, you know, have a chat with her. Or just given some of the techniques that have come over, it's just about, we just want to reach as many people as possible now, because there are those options there. The waiting list for the NHS and you know, for general kind of talking therapies is so long. And actually, if I've got the information that I know has helped me previously, why would I not share it?
Yeah.
Why would I not?
Making a point about teachers as well. So I was a teacher during previous to the pandemic, and then as it hit, and I remember going, we're not going to close down, reassuring the kids it's fine. And then when we got the word of, we are closing down tomorrow, and the kids, I remember them looking at me and they said, oh, Miss Verdenweber, what's going to happen? Are we going to be okay? And it was the first time that I turned around to the kids and went, I don't know. I can't reassure you with this.
Yeah.
And I lost my job during the pandemic then, because there was staff cut downs and everything like that. And I just remembered thinking about the kids not being able to see them. And I wrote them this letter and I posted it on the school forum for them to see. And then not knowing how they were, that really affected me. But not being able to be that person to you know, look at them in the eye and go, it's going to be okay. And I think it's so lovely that you are going into schools, you're helping the kids, you're helping the teachers as well, being like, it's okay to be a human being, because I felt so wrong in that moment.
Unfortunately, we are out of time on this, but I will obviously give us a quick opportunity to get your socials or if people want to find out more about you and what you do. And I think there's a follow-on for this. We need to do this a bit more. But tell us a little bit more about how people can get in touch with you.
So best way is through the website or social media. If you basically look for The Calm Charm, my face will come up absolutely everywhere. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on LinkedIn. There's even a video of me on YouTube actually having a panic attack and using the keyrings to kind of get me through. So yeah, so I'm available on The Calm Charm. Anyone can contact me. I will always have a chat with anyone. So yeah, that's me. Gemma?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Instagram. I've got a few little videos on YouTube as well, doing some sessions with children. And I've got a website. So if you just type in Giving Emotions a Meaning, then you'll find me.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you so much for coming in. Fascinating stuff.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.